Hello, Josephine. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing well. So excited to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Of course. So Josephine has her own podcast, and you've had it a long time. I went and looked today, 2017.
Yeah, I know. It has been a labor of love and a long time. When I first started, it was like my mom listening and like two friends, right? and it has really grown. So now we just hit like over 2 million downloads. So that's like mind-boggling. I don't even know how that happened, but yeah.
Oh my gosh, congrats. That's awesome. Yeah,
thank you.
Her podcast is called Inner Work, a Spiritual Growth Podcast, and you literally cover everything.
I try.
I mean, because it's a broad scope, there's a lot of things to cover, but a couple of things that stuck out to me. I loved that you did stuff on being triggered. I love that you had a 30-day authenticity challenge. You just cover so many interesting things, but the one thing that I really wanted to talk to you about today is about shadow work.
Yes.
The episode that I listened to that you did, it was almost like how you could put a face to your shadow. And it was like a step-by-step thing for that, which I found fascinating because in a way it feels like dumbing it down, but I love the simplicity of it because it speaks to people that are first getting into this where they're like, what's the shadow? So I want to start off with that. So if we could talk about what exactly is shadow work?
Yeah, absolutely. That's the best place to start. Yeah.
Right.
And I think sometimes it is true going kind of back to basics and maybe bringing like a beginner's mind to it can be helpful, even for people that are experienced and have been doing this, you know, like a million years. I think sometimes we do need to simplify. So the way I look at it, shadow work is, to me, it's like an ongoing lifelong process, really, of, as you said, coming face to face with the aspects of ourselves that maybe we have rejected or disavowed or suppressed, or we feel these parts of us are not acceptable for whatever reason, consciously or unconsciously. I also think our shadow selves are the wounded parts of us that are, maybe are carrying some trauma or some unhealed wounds from the past. And so these shadows in ourselves have developed some coping mechanisms sometimes, or defense mechanisms that are not necessarily functional or are not really serving us anymore. So these are maladaptive mechanisms that can get triggered when these shadow parts sort of come to the surface. And just to give, you know, a concrete example, and I can talk from my own life because I'm really an open book and I can share whatever. So I have one shadow part that's very strong in me. That's the people pleaser. And I know many people can relate to that. And I have been working on that part of myself, you know, my whole life, or my whole adult life, really. And so the people pleaser might get triggered, let's say, and come to the surface when someone is asking me to do something that maybe I don't necessarily want to do or have the time or the space or the energy to do. But the people pleaser will, you know, get triggered, pop up, come to the surface, and kind of put pressure on me that I have to say yes anyway, because that's just how the people pleaser operates, right?
Right.
Is by saying yes to everything and everyone. Making sure that everyone else's emotions are okay, that everyone is feeling good. So making sure, like, emotionally everyone is okay and calm, and there's no anger, and there, you know, nobody's gonna get mad at me.
Right.
So just, which is, as I said, just a maladaptive coping survival mechanism, right? That I learned growing up. And I think in some ways that kind of served me, or has served me in some ways, of, well, I can navigate, you know, social situations and be okay.
Right.
Or I can just make friends easily, let's say, because I can very intuitively be aware of what people need and want from me, and then give that to them, like, to a fault.
Yeah.
So there are some ways in which this has served me, has helped me survive, first of all, and then has kept me safe emotionally, physically, whatever. But now it has become, you know, this pattern that doesn't serve me anymore because it's really draining and it's exhausting. And I don't get to be my authentic self when the people pleaser is triggered, because that's just one very specific, narrow pattern of behavior that it has that is not my authentic self. Right. And so just to give that as an example of how these shadow selves might get triggered and then start running the show of yeah. our lives. And that can happen, you know, with so many other kinds of shadow selves, like the approval seeker, the overachiever, right? So being hyperproductive, not being able to stop, always having to be busy. We might also have shadow selves like the victim or the martyr. So these parts of us that will get triggered and go into victimhood. And I say all of that with the utmost love and care.
Right.
Because we're not doing any of that on purpose. And we all have these parts of us. So I think that's really a key part of doing shadow work, is realizing, oh, okay, this part of me is actually not really against me. Like, it's not trying to hurt me. It's not trying to cause problems in my life. It's just running on this automatic pattern of behavior, this maladaptive coping mechanism, and it's just trying to keep me safe. So bringing in some compassion and acceptance for these parts of us is really an essential attitude as we're doing shadow work.
Right. So is this something that we developed as children or somewhere along the way where we thought it was serving us? You realized at 6 or 7 years old that if you people please, then it makes friends easier or something like that. And so that's why, is that where they stem from?
Yeah, I think for the most part, absolutely. Yes, these are things that we've learned and picked up and internalized along the way. Sometimes it's even behaviors that we have witnessed in our caregivers. So if I grew up, let's say, which this is not true because my mom is the opposite of a people pleaser. but let's say if I had grown up with a mother, you know, who has people pleasing tendencies, then even just as a child, I might observe that and then unconsciously think, oh, that's the way that you navigate the world. So I'm going to be a people pleaser too. So some of these things we can pick up even that way. Or absolutely just learning, oh, what are the behaviors that seem to keep me safe, that keep me out of trouble, where I can just fly under the radar or keep the peace or get someone else's love and not be abandoned. So as you can tell, these shadow selves have some specific agendas right. that they're kind of running out of, or things that they're trying to accomplish. And typically at the top of that list is keeping us safe in some way.
Yeah, what's so mind-boggling about it, though, is that it's kind of intertwined with words like personality and character. Yeah. Because like, I love people approval. Like, I love knowing that there's people that are getting something out of what I'm saying, whether it's a laugh or they find it interesting. So I very much feed on that. And I always attribute it to being like a middle child. You know, seeking attention, or absolutely. That I'm an extrovert. So, I mean, there's so many things where it kind of all gets boggled together, and you don't know if it's a character flaw or if it's something that you should or should not be doing. You know what I mean?
Oh, that is so true. And that's why even I say for like a shadow aspect, like the overachiever, let's say. Even that, in some ways, you know, like achieving in and of itself, achieving things, seeking ways to be quote unquote successful, whatever right. that means to people, that's not necessarily a bad thing or a character flaw. Mm-hmm. I think it's more when these parts of us are operating out of that wounded place or compulsively, and we're taking it to an extreme. That then it's like, oh, as I said, I can't be my real self. I can't be my authentic self when the overachiever is totally triggered and I'm just running on that automatic loop. And I can share, like, even now, I had COVID for the first time this year, 2023. And that was really challenging for my overachiever part, because it forced me to be still. Mm-hmm. And it forced me to reschedule things, which I hate doing.
Yeah.
And it forced me to not be able to work, you know, and check all the things off my to-do list, as I like to do, as a type A person. With
this, I was going to say, yeah, you sound like, right? My sister.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, once you check something off, it's so gratifying.
Oh my God. There's like adrenaline, right? It's great. But I have this part of me that goes in and does those things compulsively and finds it difficult to rest and finds it difficult to prioritize health and just being and just sitting. And I've had to learn how to do those things and be really conscious about it. So getting COVID and then, you know, being laid up for a few weeks, that was really triggering my overachiever, who was just kind of like jonesing to get back to work.
Right.
So I had to be really mindful of that and just give it some compassion, you know, and kind of say, hey, overachiever, I know you really want to get back to work, do all the things, check all the things off. I know that that's really important to you. Like, that's how you have helped me do things in the world. But look, right now, I'm sick. I have to rest. And actually, resting is the most productive thing we can do.
Yes.
Right now, because otherwise, it's just going to delay the recovery if we're running around. So trying to speak to that part of ourselves in a way that is going to understand a little bit and maybe work with us instead of working against us.
Right. I feel like the word shadow makes it seem so like a devil on your shoulder kind of thing. So for somebody that says, okay, so big deal, I like to achieve things, I like to really put myself out there and work as hard as I can, then the shadow would be a workaholic.
Like, right, that,
taking
true.
It to an extreme,
yes,
is where you get into the danger zone. It's not necessarily the first component of it, but when you take it too far, that's when it,
exactly,
becomes more of a shadow. Okay, so what do we do to,
yes,
to combat our shadow?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I do have this, it's like a loose process, but it is like a 4-step process that I have developed and that I sometimes use with clients. So really the first step is to identify the shadow, because the thing is, typically these shadows are subconscious parts of us. So we're not always necessarily aware that,
right,
we have these shadow selves. And I like what you were saying before about, well, how do I know? Is it just my personality? Is it just, you know, a character trait? Is it a shadow part? So sometimes we might not be aware, and sometimes we're just so overly identified,
yeah,
with a shadow self that it has become our whole identity. And that's where we might be running on autopilot, and just, it's like it takes up your whole self, right? So,
right,
if I allow the overachiever to run the show completely, then I might just see myself as a type A workaholic, overachiever person, and not even be aware that that's a problem, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the first step is to identify the shadow. And the way we can do this, and it's just something that sometimes happens naturally, but we can also bring some more kind of intention to it, make it more intentionally. So the way I like to think of it is, whenever we experience a trigger, an emotional trigger, where something makes us reactive, right? So we react to something like with a knee-jerk reaction, and then we are emotionally triggered and there's a lot of emotional discomfort, or we are lashing out at someone or ourselves, these kinds of things. If you look underneath that and what's happening underneath, you can identify the shadow self that has gotten triggered or that might be involved with that particular trigger. So as I said, with me getting COVID, that was the trigger, right? So, oh, now I have to rest and I don't want to rest. I want to keep going. because I have this overachiever part.
Right.
So if you look at the trigger, then typically underneath you can find some shadow aspect of yourself that is coming to the surface. Does that make sense?
It does.
As the first step.
For somebody that maybe doesn't think that they have any shadows.
Yeah.
and that's not me. I know I do.
No, I know.
Do they need to ask somebody close to them? Like,
oh yeah.
Are there any personality things that you see in me? Because people are very much in denial.
Right.
Because we like to project and we like to say, that person brings that out in me. It's not me. It's what they do to me. So, I mean, what if you think you don't have any?
It's so true, right? And so, and we like to externalize it and project it outward, right?
Yes.
And we don't want to say, oh, there's something in me that is unhealed.
Right.
Maybe here that I need to look at. So I think a good line of questioning for that, for ourselves, right? So bringing as much consciousness to this as we can is, first of all, just being aware, when do you get agitated emotionally? When do you get stirred up? What triggers you? So who are the people that trigger you? What are the situations that tend to trigger you? The relationships that trigger you the most, and just gently examine that and start there. But I do think other people can be great mirrors to us if we allow them to be, if we're willing to allow them to do that for us. So absolutely asking a really close friend, someone you really trust, a partner, you know, what are the patterns that you see me getting lost in, or the patterns that are repetitive? When do you see me get triggered or acting like not really myself, right? Because typically when a shadow self gets very triggered, it's almost like you might go into a state of acting like someone that's not really you. So you don't even feel like yourself, right?
Right.
And so definitely using other people as mirrors, and also just asking, what are the most triggering things for you? People, situations, places, relationships, and then taking that as a first step.
Okay.
Yeah. So starting to identify those shadow aspects. And then I really, really like this process of using intuitive drawing as the second step. And I know sometimes when I'm working with clients and they're like, oh, I'm nervous. I'm not an artist. I don't know how to do that.
Right.
But it doesn't have to be perfect. It doesn't have to be artistic. This is just a therapeutic process that we can use to get in touch with the shadow self, especially because, as we were saying before, very often these shadow selves have developed in early childhood or even before that. So sometimes using, you know, like high level language to try to communicate with them just doesn't work. So with intuitive drawing, you can get in touch even, you know, with your inner child, with more just your intuitive, emotional, empathic, sensitive side. You don't have to be rational about it. You don't have to overthink it. So it's just like grabbing a pencil or a marker or a pen or whatever, putting it to paper. And then once you've identified that shadow self, so let's say you're working with the people pleaser, right? So then you would sit down, do some breathing, get the paper and the pen or the marker, and then just sit down and intuitively ask, okay, if I draw the people pleaser, what would it look like? And then you just allow your hand to move and you draw your shadow self on that paper. And as I said, it's so, so important not to overthink it and just allow it to come up intuitively. Because there's so much that will be revealed to you if you're willing to do this. So even just, for example, how much space on the paper your shadow ends up taking. And so I've worked with people and sometimes, you know, the shadow is taking up the entire paper, the entire page. and that typically to me says, oh, you're feeling very small in comparison to this shadow aspect, right? Or you're feeling like this is something that's insurmountable. Like you're never not going to be a people pleaser because it's such a big part of your identity. But sometimes, you know, it's a lot smaller than that. Maybe it's taking up a corner of the paper. So that's already showing you kind of where are you standing in relationship to this shadow self? How much of your energy, of your life is it taking up? And then you can also look and see, okay, have you drawn your shadow in maybe like a human? Is it a human figure? Is it an animal? Is it like a blob of black energy? You know, so what are the colors that you've used? What is the shape? Is there anything around your shadow? Is your shadow holding something? So all of that is extremely illuminating as you're interpreting the drawing. And then you can also just check in and see, now that you have your shadow self on this paper in front of you, where you can get a little bit of distance from it and maybe look at it a little bit more objectively without getting triggered, what are the emotions, what are the feelings that are coming up in you as you observe it on the paper? And for this, I like to share just a little anecdote because I use this process for myself all the time. And I've had a lifelong sugar addiction, which now, you know, luckily is like, I don't see it as an addiction anymore. I've done a lot of work on it. But so I had this shadow that I just called the sugar addict because that's what it was. So I decided to do this process and I drew the sugar addict on a piece of paper. And once I did, I mean, it was really cute. It was like a blob with this big mouth, right? Because it couldn't get enough sugar or treats. And then it was holding like a pint of ice cream on one hand, a tray of cookies on the other hand. But once it was outside of me and I could look at it on the paper, I just felt this intense wave of just compassion and empathy and forgiveness, and just could really see it for what it was, which was like a scared little child, you know, just wanting to eat the cookies, like to feel safe and to feel more grounded and like to feel okay being in a human body and all of that. So even at this step, we might already experience a lot of healing and shifts that happen as we externalize the shadow and it's right there in front of us and we can look at it and start processing some of those feelings. Yeah. Is that making sense?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. Well, and at the end of the day, the shadow is actually supposed to be there almost to protect you, right? Like the shadow is created as like a guard for you to protect you from how you're feeling. So it doesn't have to look like Satan or some kind of devil. No. Like it's actually something that's was created to protect you. Yes. So shadow just leaves so many pictures to the imagination. Yes. You hear shadow, it's like it's evil. So and so, yeah, I think people need to realize that too, that if it's big, maybe it's because it was created for you in a time when you really needed some protection or felt like you needed a big bodyguard for yourself.
Yeah, that's such a good point. It's true. So it might have been created at a time where, you know, maybe there was a traumatic event or there was a lot of trauma and we felt overwhelmed with it. So I like your way of looking at it as a bodyguard in a sense, because that really is what these shadow selves are. And I think maybe the dilemma is that, you know, as we're protecting ourselves, if we take it to an extreme, that's when, you know, it's not just a bodyguard, but it also becomes almost like a wall that we put up, and then we can't really connect with others authentically. We can't even connect with ourselves or our higher selves really when the shadow is fully triggered. But sometimes I like to use just the term sub-personality instead of shadow. I think sub-personality is just a lot more neutral.
Right.
That is just one, you know, small, limited human aspect of ourselves within the broader personality that we have in this lifetime. So maybe that takes some of that negative connotation away that shadow can have.
Right. Yeah. So you put that picture on your mirror. What are you doing with the picture once you have it in front of you and you can kind of meet it?
Yeah, you do. Yeah, you are meeting it. So you have, you're holding that paper in front of you. I mean, you could stick it up somewhere or even on the wall, you know, to look at it. And then at that point, you can engage in a compassionate dialogue with your shadow. If it feels good to do that, if it feels like your shadow is receptive and open to that, then once it's on the paper, you can start literally having a dialogue with your shadow. So asking things like, okay, why are you showing up right now? So why are you here? I want to learn about you. I want to know more. So again, this is really a process where we have to bring in that compassion and just radical acceptance and a sense of curiosity. So it's not at all hostile, right? We're not trying to attack the shadow or like figure it out or try to fix it. It's none of that. We really have to bring an intention of almost like extending an olive branch to the shadow, if that makes sense. Yeah. So just saying, you know, how long have you been with me? What do you need from me that I could give you? Are you trying to keep me safe? And if so, from what? So what are you protecting me from? What do you feel your job has been so far? Typically, the shadow has some job that has been trying to do. What do you fear, right? Is there a way that we could work together? So ideally, these questions, again, we're asking them from a place of curiosity and just openness to see what the shadow in us has to say or what it might need from us to feel safe now in the present, that the trauma is over, childhood is over, right? We are adults now. So maybe there's something that the shadow self needs from us to be able to feel safer. And typically that's unconditional love in one form or another. But it's just about getting really curious and engaging in this open-ended dialogue with the shadow.
Right. Is that what it boils down to, really? I mean, if you had to summarize it, do you think it's just people needing to love themselves?
Yeah, I think ultimately it really is. And I don't want to oversimplify it because sometimes shadow selves can have other agendas.
Sure.
But for the most part, if we really get down to it underneath all of that, I think we have developed most of these shadow parts in one way or another, to try to get love or keep that love. Mm-hmm. So to make sure that people are not going to abandon us.
Right.
Because even with something like the overachiever in me, you know, what is really the agenda of the overachiever? It's like, well, it learned at some earlier age that in order to be accepted, to get love from people, to get validation, one really good way of doing that is to achieve a lot of things, right?
Yeah.
And to be, quote unquote, successful. But underneath that, it's not just, oh, I want to be successful for its own sake, but it is, oh, this is a way to be accepted in society or in a group of people. This is a way to get love. This is a way to get that external validation and therefore feel okay about myself. So if I can give myself that validation and unconditional love, then maybe I don't need to overachieve as much. So I do think that ultimately that is kind of the medicine that we can give to ourselves.
What's a good way to start that process of compassion for yourself and love for yourself? Like, what are some steps to take for people once they figured out, I like to eat sugar all the time because I don't feel secure in myself. I'm not good to myself. I say mean things to myself. What's a good place to start?
Yeah, that's a question I get all the time from listeners of the podcast. And it just breaks my heart that for whatever reason in our culture, it feels like self-love is something that so many of us have such a hard time with, and that we don't even know where to start. So I think it has to, always it has to start really gently and gradually, where we're not, so I think maybe the first thing is that it's really important to be mindful if you're coming at this from an energy of there's something wrong with me. I'm like inherently flawed or broken, and therefore I have to fix myself.
Right. Because
coming at it from that place of trying to fix, trying to figure it out, really pushing is just really gonna backfire.
Yeah.
And that's actually a way that we're being harsh with ourselves and not showing ourselves love. One of the things I recommend to people is first, if you can, because sometimes, as we were saying before, other people are better, maybe judges of us in a sense than we are of ourselves. So asking close friends, loved ones, relatives, what are the things that you love about me, right? And that might be a really vulnerable question to ask. But sometimes those are the people, you know, the people that love us the most can sometimes see the best in us or see the light in us that we can't see in ourselves yet.
Right.
So asking those people, our friends, what are the things you love about me? What are my quirks that you find endearing, right? What are the things that you feel I bring to your life? And then starting to see if you can receive some of what they're saying in response to that, which sometimes even that can be difficult, or we might have resistance, or we might not fully believe them. But just starting there, because there's probably going to be like a common thread in what people say, right? So maybe they love your sense of humor, or maybe people love your empathy or your sensitivity. So you might start to uncover some of your gifts there that you're not seeing in yourself yet. And then you can start to love those gifts and maybe start to see yourself as someone who does bring wonderful things to other people's lives.
Right.
So that can be a starting place. But then I think also when we're working with ourselves, it's so important to bring the body into the healing process. So just the physical body that sometimes we can also be so harsh with. And I think if we have difficulty with self-love, that tends to extend to how we treat our physical bodies.
Right.
So say even when we do need rest, or our bodies are saying, you know, hey, you need to stop, or hey, this relationship is not right for you. And, you know, you get that gut feeling about something, and then we might override it or try to ignore it or deny it because we don't have that self-love or self-worth or just respect for ourselves or even trust in what our bodies are telling us.
Right.
And the intuition really does speak through the physical body. So doing things that are kind to your body, that is so important too. And it's a great way of extending that self-love to yourself. So even just like taking a minute to give yourself a self-hug, which sounds so stupid and so simple, but it can make a huge difference when you notice yourself berating yourself, criticizing yourself, judging yourself in some way, kind of just stopping. So starting to become more aware of that and then pausing, stopping for a minute, taking a deep breath, giving yourself a self hug or just placing your hands over your heart and maybe saying some words of compassion to yourself like, I know you're doing the best you can. This is challenging. You have learned in a lot of ways how to not trust yourself or to override your gut feelings, your intuition. That's okay. We're unlearning all of that now, and it might take some time, but I love you. So just saying to yourself, I love you. You are okay. I've got you. I'm going to work, you know, through this, and I'm going to work on this as long as it takes, there's no rush. But just trying to extend kind of that unconditional acceptance to yourself. Yeah.
I love that, that compassion. And a lot of the times it's like what you want to hear from other people, you just need to say it to yourself.
Yes.
The words that you wish hear from somebody else, you just have to say it to yourself. Yeah.
Completely. Especially like those words that sometimes we do wish we would have heard from parents, primary caregivers, right? Other people growing up. If we didn't get that unconditional love growing up, then it can be really challenging to learn how to give that to ourselves. So we might have this relationship with ourselves that is conditional, based on what we are achieving or how productive we are or how much we're taking care of everyone else. And those are the only times when we can maybe see the good in ourselves or love ourselves. So learning that unconditional love for the self really is a healing process. It's going to take some time. So being patient with ourselves is so important as we walk through all of that.
Yeah. And I was listening earlier about an episode. I clicked on it because it totally resonated. And it was about being triggered when you had gotten a review. But at the end of it, you were saying, you know, that you are putting yourself out there, and that is a very vulnerable and scary thing to do. I know people are like, big deal, there's a million podcasts out there, but when you actually hit record and then you submit it and you know it's just blasted out there for whoever to hear, it is such an exposed, scary feeling. And you have to give yourself props for that, that even if it doesn't resonate with everybody that listens, the fact that you put it out there and if it resonates with one person, that's all that matters, you know? But I think that's such a scary, but like a thing where you should say, you know what? I'm proud of myself. I am doing what I feel like is best and what I think is good. And I'm trying my hardest, and we have to be kind to ourselves that way.
Yes, that you're so right. And I'm so glad that I'm sure you have a podcast too, obviously. You might have related to that. But I love what you're saying about loving ourselves, not for the outcome, you know, when we take an action or we do something in life and it's like, we're so often focused on what's the outcome, right? And did I achieve that thing? Did I succeed in the way that I wanted to? Did I get the prize, right? So to speak. I think if we can love ourselves just for taking an action like that, or being vulnerable, or being authentic in some way, putting ourselves out there, regardless of the outcome, I think really the success is already in like the trying and the doing.
Yeah, 100%.
So if we can see how important, how valuable that is when we do that and be sort of independent of the outcome and not care about it so much. I mean, for me, at least, that has made my life a lot richer and also more relaxed. Where I'm not like obsessed with having to be perfect at everything. That's another shadow self, the perfectionist.
That's a whole other episode.
I could talk about that for ages. So I love what you're saying about just loving yourself for trying, for putting yourself out there, for being vulnerable in some way.
It's not easy, people.
It's not. I know.
Okay, Josephine, I am going to let you promote yourself now and not hold you to this conversation for the entire day, even though I could. You're just fascinating.
It's so fun.
It is. So go ahead and tell people how they can find you.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you. So the easiest way is to go to my website, josephinehartman.com, and you can find the podcast on there, and it's also on pretty much every podcast platform. So Inner Work, a spiritual growth podcast. And you can also find on that website, I have a few self-paced courses. I also have an Akashic Records certification program that is open for enrollment right now. And yeah, you can connect with me on there and see just the different ways of working together.
Awesome. Thank you so much for taking the time. I'm glad you're feeling better from COVID.
Oh, thank
and
you.
I really appreciated you coming on and talking today. That's just such a huge topic. And I feel like people can benefit so much from it. So thank you so much, Josephine. I appreciate you.
Yeah. Thank you, Dawn. I'm so happy that we were able to do this. Yeah. I appreciate
you. All right. You take care and we'll be in touch.
Okay. Thank you so much.
All right. Bye-bye.